I'm Lindy Paxton from IndyCar on Versus, and you need more front wing.
Position. There's no question for that. Those two had been running close to side by side at the exit of turn number two.
For the PPG Cup. Look, oh, look at that. Here he comes. And he gets him. Can he get him back? Can he hang on?
Hello and welcome to another More Front Wing podcast. I'm Steph, joined by Paul, and tonight also joined by Kevin Lee of IMS Radio and co-host of Trackside, who was good enough to join us back at Planet IRL for a preseason podcast to go over our predictions for the year, and now is joining us for a postseason wrap-up podcast to discuss what our predictions were, how things ended up, and just generally put a cap on the 2010 season. Kevin, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thanks, Steph. I now know why you wanted me on, because I was way off on willpower, and you were very close to right. I've been very open about how much I missed on power throughout the season. That's why I tried to jump on his bandwagon after Indianapolis and rode him until the end, even though I felt going into the last race that Dario was the smart call. But I still stuck with Will, and he almost got it done.
Well, he very nearly did.
If it makes you feel better, Kevin, I had him bringing up the rear with you, so don't feel too bad.
Well, talking about our championship picks and how things ended up is a good place to start. So just as a quick reminder, yes, I did pick Will, and I suppose that makes me the closest of the three of us, although I'm not sure that means anything. Paul had picked Ryan Briscoe, and Kevin had picked Scott Dixon. And both of those are very interesting because I think both of them underperformed by the standards that pretty well everyone was expecting coming into the season.
Yeah, I'd say slightly so. The standards are pretty high. I guess I'm starting first to think about Dixon. He still won three races this season. He still finished third in the championship, but he had three straight oval races late in the year where he just didn't have the pace of Franchitti. He didn't qualify well. He'd gone, 40-some races qualifying in the top 10. I had the stat at one point, 40-some, maybe even a low 50s of qualifying in the top 10. And then he went 2 out of 3 not qualifying in the top 10. So, again, for his standards, disappointing, but still a pretty good season. Briscoe, same type of situation. I think disappointing to his standards, disappointing to Penske's standards. But when you finish, where did he end up finishing? Fifth or fourth?
Fifth in the standings.
Not obviously an awful season, but I guess when you're talking about the two different classes of teams, when you finish fifth and you're with the Penske Ganassi team, I guess somehow, in some ways, that's last in class.
It is, and he only had one win for the entire season, and that was at Texas, so.
You know, I saw a lot of parallels of Scott Dixon's year this year to what we saw with Dan Weldon's year in 2007, where by all accounts, if it's anybody who's not at Target Chip Ganassi Racing, he has a very good year. Unfortunately, his teammate outperformed him pretty much consistently through the year, so he kind of got lost in the shuffle from what would be considered a good year to, as we've said, he underperformed, fly under the radar. Pick your cliche there. If you look at it in isolation, it's a good year. But the way, as Kevin said, if you take away Homestead, he kind of just disappeared the last, three, four, five races of the year, and we didn't really hear much, particularly after Edmonton. And remember, Edmonton wasn't a race he should have won.
No, exactly.
He should have been. He was running third on that last restart, and suddenly has the victory gifted to him. So you have to go back quite a ways into the year to see where he really performed really well. But Briscoe, he just didn't have the form he had of 2009. He seemed, I don't want to say lost or distracted, but he just didn't seem to have the drive. And you have to wonder if the way he finished out 2009, if he ever really got over that hump, if he wasn't reliving Japan, if he wasn't reliving Homestead, throughout this year and never could get past that shadow, because he, other than the race at Texas, he just never never really came into form this year, and I expected a lot more of him. I expected him to run stronger and compete for more victories than just the one that he had.
And when you look at the stats straight up on paper, it becomes a little bit more clear why there are rumors swirling about him possibly finding himself no longer in a Penske seat if that team does get reduced back to two cars.
And it was just the early part of this year that everyone started to wonder, well, not everyone, but there were rumors about whether Elio's ride was even secure. Besides the fact that Penske's going to do whatever he can to let Elio get that fourth win for him at Indianapolis. But Elio, people had said he wasn't performing well coming into this year. You know, obviously coming back from the trial in 2009, you can give him some exception. But the way he finished this year with, what do you have, three wins at the end? Two wins back-to-back, ran strong the back end of the year. I thought he was impressive the last of the year, and he certainly made his strong case for why Roger Penske should have that three car for Elio next year.
Yeah, I just didn't see any real concern for Elio not being back in that car next year. I think Elio is going to have a few more seasons. I don't know what you can say that the long-term range is, but at this point, and even early in this season, Helio Castroneves is not going anywhere. As long as he's still a top-level driver, a top-five driver, and he's going to be one of the two or three to beat at Indianapolis, he's not going anywhere as long as he's got a chance to win a fourth 500. And I think Briscoe's going to be back, too.
Well, only time will tell. I would find it surprising to see Penske go down to a two-car team as well. But, I mean, it could all be blowing smoke just to try to make some sponsorship money show up as well. You never know with these things. So the other thing that's worth discussing for the championship situation is the fact that absolutely no one that I'm aware of went into the season picking Dario to be a repeat champion. I gave a listen to our preseason podcast before we came on the air tonight, and I noticed that all three of us were sort of questioning, coming into 2010, what Dario's level of motivation was going to be, and even speculating whether this might be his last year in the IndyCar series. There was also an interesting thing that came up, that the IndyCar series before the start of the season had released a little press release that showed the picks for the 2010 champion as chosen by each of the drivers in the series, and only one driver in the series in total picked Dario to be the 2010 winner. So, in a sense, this ended up being a bit of a surprise.
I think so. I think maybe you wondered, had Dario come back, done everything that he needed to do? He won his first championship in 500, went away, came back, showed people he was still at the top of the game, won a 500. He's openly talked now for 5 or 6 years that at some point he's going to go sports car racing. So we still put him under that year-to-year umbrella. I can't recall what I said in the podcast, but maybe it's just revisionist history, but I'm not surprised that Dario won the championship, and maybe I'm thinking more as to what happened after Indianapolis. After he won Indianapolis, after talking with him for a few times, I was convinced at that point that he wanted to come back for at least 2011, and he confirmed that again to several people, including me and Kirk Cabot. And I guess I should also mention that I know Kirk picked Dario to win the championship before this season. So I know some people had this, but unfortunately not any of us.
We talked about the motivation. We said, okay, he came back. He proved that he could do it in 2009. What motivation does he have in 2010? And I looking back, I think there was a little bit, and it wasn't Dario to his peers, it was maybe more to the fans. In 2007, he won the championship that probably should have gone to Dixon. Dixon ran out of fuel on the last corner, and Dario won that championship. There was a faction of fans that said he lucked into that one. 2009, almost the same situation where he wins that last race on fuel mileage. Again, there is a faction of fans that say, he coasted into that one. They want to take the one race and extrapolate it over the course of the year. I think this year Dario has proven that without a doubt this was a very worthy championship, that he won this not on any fuel mileage sort of deal. He won this you know, coming from behind in the last, you know, several races, the last set of ovals. And this is certainly the epitome of a complete championship on his part.
That's funny that you see it that way, Paul, because I see it as being the exact same situation that his other two have been. If you look across his finishes throughout the year, he only has three wins, and that puts him on par with Dixon and Castro Neves, and Will had five wins throughout the year. It's not the wins that did it for him. It's the consistency in the podium finishes and the top fives that gave him the points that he needed across the entire season to be able to come into the last race and claim you don't win a championship in one race.
Well, exactly. And more than you don't win it with one race, you don't win it by dominating one type of race. When you look at this season, it looks like Will Power dominated this season from beginning to end. And more than anything, that's a function of, well, of course, Will was unbelievable on road courses, but with the block schedule of the road courses, he was able to build up that big lead and kind of, you know, build it up, let it go, build it up, and then finally let it go again at the end. If we had a more traditional schedule where you had the road courses and the ovals intermixed much, much more than they were this year, I think we would have seen we wouldn't be talking about Will Power dominating this year as we tend to be doing so far. Not us in particular, but the common perception was that this was Will's year, that he threw it away at the end. If we had seen that more traditional intermingled schedule, it would be interesting to look. If you add up the points by the points that they were scored this year, but instead of doing it in the order they scored them, go back and forth between road course and oval, and see how the point standings look that way. I think it would be really interesting to look at it from that scenario. And if you do that, I think you're going to see Dario, other than those first couple of races where he struggled at, he had a poor finish at Long Beach. He didn't maybe finish second or third at Sao Paulo, I don't recall. But I think from starting probably around Kansas, you would see him consistently, if not the leader, right up there as the leader. And I think you would see Power probably a little bit further down in the second, third, fourth position throughout most of the year.
Kevin, do you have anything to add to that?
Well, I guess one thought I would have on Power is that I thought he had a championship season. And he made the mistake in the last race, although I think it had gotten to the point where he realized that he had to force the issue. Running fourth wasn't going to get it done. Running second wasn't going to get it done, because Scott Dixon was not going to pass Dario Franchitti. Tony Kanaan was not going to pass Dario Franchitti. He had two teammates, so he was going to have to pass those two guys. And then he was going to have to win the race. So he still made the mistake, and that's on him. But I think he really needed to be aggressive at that point. He went from having an 11-point lead to all of a sudden being behind because Franchitti had won the bonus points for that race. He could have won Indianapolis. There were some mistakes in the pits. One of them, I can't recall, might have been his for not getting the car settled in the pick box. I'm not certain of that. Texas was no fault of his own. He picked up debris. Chicagoland was not his fault. Could have won three oval races. I think he had a championship season, but it's based on the whole 17 races, and the 10 team was better than the 12 team this year, and Franchitti still wins, even though he had at least one race of bad fortune. That was the gearbox problem that he had at Iowa, when mm-hmm. he was probably going to win that race and certainly finish in the top three.
I think that your wording with that is exactly it, Kevin. The 10 team was better than the 12 team this year. It wasn't. I don't think it's fair to say that Dario Franchitti was better than Will Power, or even vice versa. This season as a whole was a perfect demonstration of exactly how much of a team sport this sport is.
Oh, definitely. It's always been a team sport. We focus on the drivers. They get all the glory. They get the blame sometimes. You know, I feel for the crew guys, because a lot of times they only get pointed out when we say, we may not say the name, but the outside, the right rear had a problem. Well, we can look, if you have one of those stat books, look up the name, or, you know, the people that work within the team, they know who that guy is. So I feel horribly for those guys. They're like umpires or long snappers in football, that they only get their name mentioned and get attention brought to them when something goes wrong. I was happy to see on the Versus broadcast that they introduced all the crew guys from the two championship contending teams, because they clearly have an awful lot to do with whether a guy wins or loses.
Absolutely. Well, let's move on to another topic then. There were a few different predictions that we made in the preseason podcast, and another one of them was the Rookie of the Year standings and how they were going to turn out. And I found this really interesting to reflect back on, because all three of us picked Takuma Sato to be the Rookie of the Year.
Everyone picked Takuma Sato.
I think so. The only other driver that entered into our discussion at all was Simona. The name Alex Lloyd did not even enter our discussion, which I found quite fascinating.
I don't know. I can't recall if I knew at this time what his rookie designation was, because he had driven three races, and I believe it's is it maybe five or six and no more than four in a season, something like that. There is a classification that keeps you a rookie, so I can't recall whether I was considering Alex Lloyd in that rookie class or not, but I do know this. We all thought with what we think is a solid team in KD Racing Technology and someone with Formula One experience that Takuma Sato should have been the Rookie of the Year, and he is up there as far as the most disappointing seasons this year. Graham Rahal finished ahead of him in the points, missing, what, four or five races? Bertrand Piquet almost championship, missing two races.
That's crazy. I hadn't noticed that stat. That's completely insane. And yet, I think that what we're hearing is that the expectation is that the ties between Sato and Lotus are strong enough that we will be seeing him back next year. Which,
I'm not sure of that.
By
I heard one pretty good source. It was a driver that told me this weekend that he hears that seat is going to be open. But I know Mike King talked with Takuma, and Takuma seemed pretty confident that he was going to be back affiliated with Lotus, so who knows where that's going to go. And maybe the talk was something from a KV source, hopeful that they could put another driver in that car that would not crash so much. So, but if Lotus says that they want Takuma Sato, then it's going to be Takuma Sato if they stay with KV.
Well, I think unquestionably, regardless of whether Sato gets to keep the seat, we have to be expecting that team to be making some pretty serious changes in the off season. There's no way, it's just not sustainable the way that things went this year. Just a quick glance at the stats here. EJ Viso's highest finish this year was third at Iowa, and other than that, he had an eighth and otherwise didn't break the top ten. Marias had a fifth, a sixth, two sevenths, and otherwise didn't break the top ten. And Sato had a ninth and otherwise did not once break the top ten this season. And Paul, I don't know what the official final count was on damaged cars for the year, but I know it was over 40, was it not?
My tally was 41. Which
so,
of those 41, 20 of them were either wall-banging carnage or ending a race. Those, you know, you look at Sato accounted for 10 heavy crashes. You know, I can name probably seven off the top of my head that stick out in my mind. Viso had one at Indy, that big one at Watkins Glen, and he had one other one somewhere else. And Marias had a handful of them as well. So,
PT managed to put a couple on the wall as well, I think.
PT, he had a couple white walls at Indianapolis, so they not to continue to rag on KV, it just goes without saying they had a terrible year, but I don't think anyone expected Sato to be as poorly performing as he did, and we should right away, he didn't even make it through the first turn at Sao Paulo. And it just went downhill from there. It was bad and never got, even when he ran competitively, I think of Iowa specifically, I think he was running third, maybe fourth, and all of a sudden just took himself out of the race.
I think he did that more than once.
He was running up front and Hideki took him out, so he did have one good race where someone else took him out, but he showed some pace at times on the ovals, but just putting it simply, it was a very, very disappointing season for KD.
All around, yeah.
And that actually works well into our third topic that we discussed in the preseason. which was when we speculated on what the breakout team of the year was going to be. And I had picked KV, which I can't do anything more than hang my head in shame on in retrospect, but you never know when you're heading into the season how these things are going to go. But it was interesting to see that Kevin and Paul both picked Dreyer and Reinbold with Justin Wilson having joined that team going into this season. Did Justin have the results that we were expecting?
I would say no.
I thought a little bit more. I thought he would do a little bit better. You know, I don't have standings in front of me, but I'm not sure that there was a breakout team this year.
I was going to say the same thing. I can't put my finger on any one team that I thought performed above what the expectations were going into the season.
I think
Andretti took a little step up.
Who was that?
I think Andretti Autosport took a little step back towards their top three status, which, you know, is a story for your next podcast, is whether that's going to continue, that momentum is going to continue, depending on their driver lineup next year. But I thought that they were more relevant, more competitive. They won,
Two races.
Yeah, with the two drivers that have their sponsorship in question at the moment, which is sort of ironic in a sad way.
Yeah, I would agree that Andretti, if they didn't, you know, if people are going to not call them one of the big teams anymore, and I think that's a fair assessment at this point, I think they certainly established themselves as the best of the rest at this point. You know, they looked good. Marco Andretti, I thought, looked much better this year. He never had a couple of races. At the beginning of Iowa, he looked very good and racy, and he had a couple other moments throughout the year where he really showed some of that spark that we saw back in 2006 when he burst onto the scene. But the last, you know, certainly the last stretch of ovals, they showed finally a little bit of that resurgence that we were hoping to see. You had the great Danica and TK battle at Homestead, and TK ran very well at Chicago, as I recall. Marco ran well at Chicago and Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that they have certainly, they've got the momentum going the right way now. And hopefully these sponsorship issues work themselves out, because I think Ryan Hunter-Reay and Tony Kanaan seem to really enjoy being teammates. They seem to work well together. And keeping those two together, I think, would certainly pay dividends for that team next year.
Absolutely. So just a couple more quick things that we thought we'd touch on before we wrap up. Kevin, I apologize because we're putting you on the spot a little bit with these. We didn't tell you we were going to do this. But we thought that each of the three of us should pick a positive element that surprised us this year and a negative element that surprised us. In the spirit of ending on a positive note, let's do the negative ones first. Paul, what's your negative surprise pick for 2010?
Well, again, without harping on KV, I don't want to take that's like picking the red cars to win. I'm going to go a different route, a way that's going to get me in trouble with a lot of fans here. I was very disappointed the year that Sarah Fisher Racing had. I expected when they picked up Graham Rahal to start the season and ran him for two or three races that certainly he wasn't going to compete for a win, but I thought a solid mid-pack effort. And I felt like that team this year really took a step backwards. They, however many races they ran, I don't recall the number, they were just never even close to competitive. They were a step ahead of Milka and really not much better than that. I expected more out of that team, having a little bit more momentum, building on their program from the past year or two. I felt like that team unfortunately regressed this year, and now with the rumors about Sarah maybe stepping out of the cockpit next year, maybe that will help them next year so she can focus solely on being an owner and get a driver in there that can provide more feedback, certainly on the road courses, but maybe drive a little bit more aggressively on the ovals and push that car to where they can move that team forward going on.
For my negative surprise pick, I think I'm going to go with Justin Wilson, actually. Looking back on his season, he had two second-place finishes very early on, and it looked as though they were going to start out, or from the start, it looked as though they were going to look very strong, but he never really got it together again the entire season. And Bill Pappas notwithstanding, it's amazing to me that he could have gotten a win at Watkins Glen with Dale Coyne Racing in 2009 and couldn't make the same thing happen with Dreyer and Reinbold in 2010. I'm not sure why that team just never seemed to gel, and it's not a surprise to hear rumors that he's looking at moving on yet again, which is really too bad because it would be great to see him find a team where he felt that he could settle in and maybe get into a rhythm and start getting things going the way that they should, because I don't think anyone would question that Justin Wilson is an incredible talent, particularly on the road and street courses, and should be performing much better than he is.
On IndyCar Weekly with Mike King, my answer was KV for most disappointing. But we've talked about them enough, so I would say the next choice would be DeFerrin Dragon Racing and Rafael Matos. I really thought by their second full year that they could be someone that ran in the top 10. I understand there's a great deal of competition, so that's part of it. It's like we like to say in football and basketball, the other team's on scholarship too. All these other teams are paid to win races, so there's a great deal of competition, and I think there is more quality in IndyCar racing than we've had in a long while. Certainly, I think we have more depth than we've ever seen in the Indy Racing League. When we talk about one through every driver except Milka Duno. No disrespect to Milka, but that's just the blatant truth. She is not a quality IndyCar driver, and Francesco Giacconi did not appear to be a quality driver, although we didn't see him enough to know whether that was him or they just couldn't get the car set up for him. But everyone else has been competent. Not necessarily race winning, but confident. But I still expected a little bit more from that team. My positive is Will Power. Because I didn't think he could finish better than fourth or fifth in the championship, he got that momentum going earlier on, like Paul said, with the way the schedule was situated. And after Kansas, he was good on ovals. He wasn't great, but he was good on ovals. My secondary choice would be Ryan Hunter-Reay, who had questions about whether he'd be at the next race much of the season. He won a race. He was competitive. He finished seventh in the championship.
Both good picks. Paul?
Well, the positive, I think, again, Will Power may be a little bit stating the obvious that, he exceeded expectations, his comeback story. There's so many great things about Will Power. I think for my performer of the year, I would probably say my pick of the year, best story of the year, does go to Ryan Hunter-Reay, though. The guy who comes into the year, gets the temporary ride with Andretti Autosport, the three-race deal. He turns that around right away and wins at Long Beach. He's rewarded, by getting that contract extended on a race-by-race-by-race deal. And then finally, the big chips fall at Watkins Glen when he was able to secure sponsorship for the rest of the year. Had the best season, I think, on Andretti Green. Again, I don't have the stats in front of me either, but I think did he finish sixth this year and best in class?
Seventh.
Okay, he was seventh, okay. But he performed well all year, I thought. I thought he was competitive. He worked well in that team. He represented Izod and Andretti Autosport well. And, I just thought he really performed and showed well for the league, showed well for himself, showed well for his sponsors. I thought he was a great story this year.
Well, for me, my pick, I'm going to say that my Canadian is showing. I was really, really impressed with Faz this year and how well they performed right out of the gate. They qualified front row right at the start at Sao Paulo. They weren't up there, obviously, with your Andretti Autosports, even, never mind Penske or Ganassi, but a brand new team coming into the season, they really outperformed, and they had some internal personnel issues that didn't make it into the public eye a whole lot as the season went on as well. So while dealing with that, they outperformed some teams that have been around for quite a while. And I think that there's a lot of promise in this team going into future years, both with Alex at the wheel of his own 77 machine, but also looking at expanding into two cars and eventually having Alex transition out into the owner role and working at bringing young drivers up through the ranks. I think that the 2010 season established that they have got a great start going on that. So, Kevin, I know we don't have you for too much longer, so we'll let you go. But thank you so much for joining us tonight. Your insight, as always, very much appreciated.
My pleasure.
All right, and as always, everybody, this offseason pay attention to trackside on 1070 The Fan Thursday nights. Is that consistent, Kevin, now for the offseason, Thursday nights?
Almost always. The radio station airs Indianapolis Colts games, and I know they have at least one game on a Thursday in December. And Butler University is also now on the station, and they have a couple of Thursday games. So I don't know whether we'll just take the week off, which is what we did last year, or whether we'll move to Wednesday. If they're Decembers, we may just take a few weeks off for the holidays. But I know we're going through November. We'll take Thanksgiving off, may have some time off in December, and then we'll be back every Thursday in January, unless there's something preemptive. But we'll make sure that we post on the Twitter pages and on the website if anything changes. But we're essentially year-round now.
Sounds great. Okay, well, we'll keep an ear out for it. Thanks so much, Kevin.
All right, good to talk to you guys. Have a good winter.
Take care, Kevin.
You too, thanks. And thanks so much to each of you for joining us as well. We will be back with our off-season interview series throughout the winter season this year, so keep an eye out for those. Other than that, we'll get back to our regular weekly podcast as we begin to ramp up for the 2011 season starting next March. Until then, remember that More Front Wing is your source online for blogs, photos, podcasts, and more covering the IZOD IndyCar Series and beyond.